Hello, welcome to the Rubik's Mental Health and Wellness Podcast. We'll be talking with community members about how to live our most meaningful and fulfilling lives. For an overview of the Rubik's program, please listen to the introductory episode.
Hi, today we're here with Kiara DeMori. Kiara is Doctor of Sustainability Education, who also has training in environmental engineering and environmental studies. And a lot of you will already know her. She's a community leader here in Howard County. She has started a number of nonprofit organizations, including Families Learning in Nature Together, also known as FLINT, as well as Columbia Families in Nature, also known as CFIN, and she now is the proud owner of one of the last remaining farm spots and historical sites in Columbia down off of Cedar Lane, and that is the new home of the Community Ecology Institute, which is another nonprofit that Dr. DeMori has started over the past decade. We have, of course, been and become close friends over the past decade, both because of our commitment to climate justice and also to children and our future as a community. So without further delay, let's get started. Hi, Kiara, how are you?
I'm well. Thank you very much for having me today.
So, you know, this podcast has been a year-long series starting back in August or September about mental health and wellness, specifically in the context of something called a wellness wheel. And so we've talked about all kinds of topics, but I think we would be remiss in ignoring the fact that we're doing this podcast recording during the coronavirus pandemic in 2020. And so, even though it might seem like the pandemic and talk of the pandemic is everywhere, I think we should talk just a little bit about that and also talk about the ongoing climate and environmental health and justice concerns that you and I have shared. So first, I just wanted to ask you, like, how have things changed for you over the past couple of months, and how are you adjusting to all of this COVID-19 pandemic stuff?
I think that's the question of the month, probably the question of the year. I feel fortunate to be able to stay safe at home for the most part and to be riding out the storm fairly well, all things considered. My kids are getting a little bit housebound, and there's definitely a sadness about not being able to be in community like we typically are. So I think right now is the biggest thing, is it's really an emotional response to feeling separated from the people we enjoy being with on a regular basis, and trying to help them navigate disappointment and sadness around missed birthday parties and missed program opportunities. And I think a real curiosity about how long it's going to last. My 7-year-old was asking me last night, what if this lasts until the fall? What if it lasts until winter? You know, what if she can't have a birthday party in January? So that's the biggest thing we have had to navigate so far. So in that, we're fortunate.
Yeah. How has it impacted? I know you are in community almost constantly with all of these community organizations that you help lead. How has it impacted your work down at the Community Ecology Institute in particular?
It's been a significant impact with the necessary stay-at-home orders. We cannot hold any of our programs.
Yeah.
The Wings Learning Community Program is not running. We're not doing any of our other events and programming. We have recently received a county innovation grant for a Climate of Hope program, where we're doing community education around climate action, and we can't hold any of those events right now. So the inability to hold events is a definite challenge. It's necessary, but it's, you know, changing plans. The inability to host volunteers also. A lot of the work that happens on the farm is through high school students and organizations that come out in groups. So it's making it slower going. Many hands definitely make lighter work, and we don't have many hands right now. And then we had plans for a spring fundraising campaign around doing restoration work on the farm, and it's not really the right time for that. So probably the third element. So it's definitely changed things dramatically for us.
Yeah, and when we talk about mental health and how your quote-unquote environment affects your mental health, being in community and who is in your community and communities is a big contributor. So I think that sense of isolation and separation is something a lot of us have been battling, and it's a little bit difficult in your context where being together in physical environments is the center of that, so that Zoom meetings really can't solve that problem. Zoom happy hours are really not the solution. And it really speaks to how important the earth is to how human beings connect with each other.
Yeah, that's so true. I mean, the one thing that I see that I think is a silver lining, I see more than one silver lining, but one is, you know, people can't gather, but people are going outside, I think, in much greater numbers as that one pathway to feeling connected to something outside of their homes or outside of their critical work if they're still working. And so number of people I see walking in the neighborhood or biking is so much greater than I have historically seen. I walked down into open space with my daughter yesterday to look for baby owls that are in a dead tree down there. And there was just a lot of people in the woods. And historically, there are not. And that's part of why I created Columbia Families in Nature, because I would take my children to those same woods and see almost no one, and wanting to help people feel more comfortable being outside. So that's a positive. I think people are getting some of the mental health benefits of going outdoors, perhaps at a greater frequency than they have because they're so overscheduled. And it's one.
And just not seeing it as a resource, right? Not seeing that as a solution. We've just gotten into, as a society, not you and I necessarily, but as a society, we had been in such a pattern of not recognizing the importance of time outside. And also the value, sort of, that it's actually not true that we don't have time. We do have time if we make a choice to be out there. And boy, do I wish that we were counting how many people we were seeing in those natural environments that you and I are in all the time before March 13th, because, you know, I agree, we go out, we have a forest by our house that we're in for 2 or 3 hours a day, and we can't be out there with the dog between like 4 and 6 because there's so many more people and she's not used to it. And it's like, it's wonderful to see other people enjoying it. And I agree, I've had the same anecdotal experience that there are a lot more folks in our communities. That when I was delivering personal protective equipment to a colleague, and there were just so many families walking and running out on the, you know, sidewalks together. And I thought, well, this is, for all of the darkness around us, a positive. And, you know, I know that people have been talking about the return to normal, and I've been sort of reminding folks, let's think about a new normal. And we've been hearing these memes of when we come back, let's come back different. And I'm really, really wishing that when we come back differently, maybe that'll be a way in which we're a little different, that we have gotten more into the habit of being in open natural spaces together.
I hope so too. I share your sentiment that a new normal is very much needed.
Yeah. So the other thing that I wanted to talk to you about, because you of course have a very broad understanding in addition to this very granular localized understanding of the importance of natural spaces and climate justice. I want to talk a little bit, since everything is all about pandemic right now, I want to just get your kind of expertise perspective on the connection between wild spaces and pandemics. So there's a woman named Sonia Shah who is a pandemic expert who has written a book called Pandemic: Tracking Contagions from Cholera to Ebola and Beyond. Mm-hmm. And she talks quite a bit about a very specific thing that we can do to prevent this happening repeatedly, because it very much can, is to stop destroying wildlife habitat. So what is that? Does that resonate for you? The importance of preserving wildlife habitat for human environmental health?
Absolutely. That's something I'm seeing come up a lot. I'm seeing some very thoughtful articles from trusted scientific sources talking about the importance of preserving ecosystems. Mm-hmm. Sure that we have sufficient natural spaces for ecosystems to thrive. Otherwise, we're going to continue to create the conditions for transference of diseases between animals and humans, and then just the cascading an environmental health crisis that we have in terms of clear-cutting forests and what that means for soil, what that means for carbon sequestration. It's, you tug at one thing, you find that everything's connected, right? So the critical importance of making sure that we are caring for the Earth's natural areas and ecosystems and seeing that we're deeply and truly dependent on and connected to the well-being of the Earth is imperative for slowing, I think, the frequency with which we get these sort of pandemic situations, but then also all the other ways in which we depend on a healthy environment for our own health and getting clean air, clean water. What's happening in the Amazon is, I think, one stark example as well. It's really current about the destruction of the Amazon and what that means for climate action, as well as preserving those ecosystems so that they can function as they're intended to. So the ripple effects of human greed are profound and have really negative consequences for people. And typically the people who are least well positioned to be able to navigate those really serious detriments that occur. So,
yeah, there's, you know, I always say that as much as I like to avoid cliches in my writing or my thinking, the cliches become cliches for a reason. And over the past few months, a couple of cliches that have already emerged are this whole, we are all one, or we're all in this together, or we're together apart. And that's something that you and I both have also always shared. You're hearing it more and more around and in, you know, in journalism and in communities and in social media. And I'm happy about that. It's another new normal that I hope does stick. And then the other one I've noticed a lot of is this sort of cliched observation that folks are having about, especially in New York City. I know a lot of people that live in New York. And so I'm hearing a lot about, I can hear the birds have been so noisy this spring. And I'm not sure if they've been more noisy or if they can just hear them more because it's not like the cacophony of taxi cabs and buses and construction and things like that. You know, what do you think about all of them? Both of those things, you know, that you, what you just said could theoretically be summed up as the idea that we are all one and we are all connected. And then also just this idea that the slowing down has refocused our attention on the fact that all of that life is going on around us, you know?
It's really interesting because, you know, I said I see multiple silver linings, and that's not to diminish how deeply hard this is for so many people and tragic. But the other one I see is this has happened so quickly, and there's been such a tremendous response to the direction to create physical distance and to stay home if you can. I have a colleague that does work internationally in a lot of the places where people are not as frequently well-connected. You know, he works in Kyrgyzstan, and he has said that wherever he's working, he is seeing people taking the same steps throughout the world. And so I don't know when we've ever had a global response that's been so immediate. You know, we're 1 month in to the world really slowing down and going inside at this incredible, I think, probably really unprecedented level. So I think that's hopeful. Like, it shows that we actually can take immediate collective action when there's a need. I think that's hopeful in terms of thinking about what's possible for making changes as we need to around climate. But then what we're seeing, and again, talking about like mental health and children, the conversation I've been having with my son, who's 10 and who's really aware of climate change because I'm his mom, and also snow this winter, and there's like really obvious signs, right? Is looking at those stories of the bears and the coyotes and the wildlife returning to Yellowstone, looking at the pictures of the canals clearing in Venice, looking at the satellite images of air pollution reducing, like you can actually see dramatic changes in the physical natural environment with just 1 month of humans changing their behavior. The pictures of the freeways being completely empty in these major cities, and of people in India being able to see the Himalayas more clearly than they have in decades. Because of air pollution reduction, and lives saved because of reductions in air pollution. My son is asthmatic, so he's really sensitive to that. It's like, well, this is a tragedy and this is a crisis, and also air pollution is down. And so for some people, that has been a lifesaver. So it's really interesting to see that too. So it may be that there are more birds in the trees in New York City, or maybe you can just hear them, like you said, because there's not so much background noise. And I think also philosophically and emotionally and mentally, there's just less background noise. People are having to slow down in some ways, simplify. And my hope is as we seek a new normal, there's a greater focus on local resilience as a way to get to a healthier, connected global. Like if we can look at the scale of our communities and think about how well connected we are in our community, how do we care for the most vulnerable among us? The Columbia Community Care Project that's come out of this is an incredible example of taking care of the people in need. Thinking about where our food comes from and making sure as much as possible we have localized food sources and we're supporting our farmers. Really looking just to think a little bit more deeply because we're slowing down and wondering like what's secure and what's not and how can I either be a helper or figure out how to support those who are doing that work that makes greater connections in our community and make sure that we have some ability to be resilient to these crises and provide for ourselves as much as we can. So I see a lot of that, like for the work I do, there's definitely an audience of people who get it, who are interested in the mission and the work and the types of programs we offer. But I think that audience is expanding as we go through this. I mean, the number of people who are starting sourdough right now seems to be astronomical. And the number of people who are buying seeds and planting seeds and interested in having a garden. And it's just fascinating to me to see what people are turning to for a source of comfort in these challenging times. And I think a lot of it points to a desire to feel more self-sufficient and more locally connected, which leads to greater resilience. So
yeah, the bread baking is fascinating to me. We have always been people that bake bread on weekends, and my husband is rather skilled at it, so he wasn't confused about how to have yeast starter. But it's so strange because, you know, the first week in the grocery store there was literally no bread, but now there's bread, but there's still no flour.
Like
people are still baking bread, even though they can buy bread now, you know? And so you're right. I mean, I think I was listening to something the other day where they were like, it may not be that you can't buy it. It may be that the comfort and resourcefulness and the time spent together, you know, baking bread or growing food. So I was going to ask you this. You mentioned people being interested in gardens, and I know that you grow food and also are very, very involved in local community supported agriculture organizations, and not just growing your own food, but encouraging others to acquire their food from local sources. So you already answered the question, but I was going to ask you, have people been reaching out to you for guidance or asking about seeds and things like that? And how are you supporting people in that since you can't be together?
So the farm is still new to us. It's just been about 9 months. And so there's just been a lot of cleanup and restoration and reclaiming of areas for food production. So we are actively planting seeds. Our greenhouse has been restored. So we're growing seeds and getting them in the ground. It's been cold this week. And so we hope to be able to have food available for donation and sale by the end of May. So we're not quite ready, but I am getting phone calls saying, do you have food? And it's like, well, it's coming. But one of the things we want to do is we want to look at being able to provide seedlings that are natives or really great seedlings to have in gardens for resilience. The idea of victory gardens has really become popular.
Yeah.
And we're really focused on climate victory gardens with the Community Ecology Institute. So it's growing your food, but doing it in a way that has climate benefits through soil health and carbon sequestration. So we want to, one, have food available to the community starting in about a month. Two, really looking at using our greenhouse as a way to provide sources of native plants and really great produce options. And then the county is doing a really great job. They just, I believe it was only yesterday, started a Howard County farm map. And so there's...
I saw that, yeah.
As of yesterday, there were 16 farms on the map. Ours being one of them, where you can figure out how to source food locally and then support those farms, which no doubt are having a hard time right now, as is everyone. So I think that's a really nice resource to have available in a way that's super user-friendly. So those are some of the ways we're looking at it. Part of the idea of our Climate of Hope project is to help get climate victory gardens in as many properties as possible. And so we were working with Howard County Teen Interfaith Network to get them to really engage on our climate victory garden and have the skills available to go out and replicate those in different faith community properties or homeowners associations or just private residence business properties. So we will definitely be picking that back up when we are allowed to gather in groups again.
Okay, I have two questions to follow up on this before we wrap up. Okay, one is you said you're hoping to have food by the end of May.
Mm-hmm.
What's going to be ready to eat? Lettuce?
Yeah, leafy greens.
Yeah, cool. And then are you going to donate and are you going to also like sell seedlings as a way to make money for the farm or is it all donation?
So in terms of the produced food, we have several different garden areas. Our biggest market garden, we're planting specifically to provide to Roving Radish, which mm-hmm. is a program that has farm-sourced food, and then they create meal kits similar to like a Blue Apron or some of those sort of things, but they provide more so to low and moderate income households. That seems like a really great fit for us, and we've been in communication with them about what would they most like to have. And so our planting plan is really oriented around getting a lot of produce to the Roving Radish, which will get out to the community. We do intend to donate as much as possible and heavily to the Grassroots Crisis Intervention Center, which is a neighbor of ours, Columbia Community Cares, Food Bank, HopeWorks, which is a partner with us on the phone. So ultimately, we'd like to move to a community-supported agriculture model on the farm, and perhaps next year will be the year for that, where people buy in and come and get their box or their cooler of produce every week. But this year, as we are continuing just to get the land up and running again in terms of growing food, it'll be probably a Saturday market at the farm, when that's a healthy thing to do. We don't want to be encouraging people to gather in a crowd. So when we can, a Saturday market, Roving Radish sales and then donations to those in need and the organizations supporting them.
Well, you are
coming a little bit later.
Yeah. You and your leadership and your organizations and the folks involved in your organizations are a real gift to our community in really a lot of levels. And I want to just wrap up by asking you to summarize sort of how you see the work that you do sort of connecting your concern about climate justice, climate health, environmental health at a very broad level, how you connect that to all of the work you're doing, and how you balance the deep existential dread is the word that I have been using a lot, that those of us who really spend a lot of time thinking about these topics can feel on a pretty regular basis. How do you balance that and keep yourself mentally well, given both the pressure of knowing that deep in your cellular structure, but also there's a lot of work that you put into all of this, all of these gifts that you give our community? Where's the balance there for you with mental health and environmental health?
Well, we could talk about that for a year or more, but I know we have just a few minutes left. It's a really profound and important question. I think part of it for me is I've worked in the environmental space my entire career. It's been my entire academic path. But for a long time, I was doing that in a way that was in a very corporate environment. And they have been doing really meaningful and significant things to benefit the environment, but it meant commuting to a city and then being in a high-rise building in an office on a computer. And there was a real lack of connection to that, which I'm deeply passionate about, and like the restorative benefits of actually having real contact with nature. Like I had very little contact with nature during that time. And so it's been a very purposeful and strategic process to change my career trajectory to allow me to be so immersed with nature and community in my day-to-day work. And that is actually what keeps me grounded. It's, I guess, maybe a bit of a pun, but literally the time I spent on the farm, tending to the land, helping to educate people. You said at the beginning, Zoom calls really doesn't do it for our mission. And that's true, because for us, it's all about experiential education outdoors. And it's really hard to replicate that in a virtual context. But all the time I do spend with people, with families and children and people from, across the entire lifespan in our county, in nature is what fills me up and keeps me hopeful, keeps me grounded. And it's literally like the best medicine for me in terms of my well-being. I come sometimes to the farm feeling very stressed or concerned or overwhelmed. And by the time I'm done with what I need to do there, I can take a deeper breath and I feel more deeply rooted to think that which gives us hope, and release that which gives me hope, which is to see things growing, is to see kids with their hands dirty, smiling, making those really deep personal connections. So it really is for me about trying to find this difficult path of creating a whole life where I don't feel like my desire to be in nature is in conflict with my work. My work is in conflict with my desire to be with my children. It's been a slow journey to try to find a way to create an integrated whole life, which I really think speaks to what you're doing with Rubik's. Like, how can you think critically about what a whole and healthy life looks like and find ways to make changes so that it's as close to that as possible? And for me, that means, you know, starting a nonprofit from, you know, changing my career completely, getting a doctorate, starting a nonprofit from scratch. That really does the work that I'm most passionate about, which the, I think, courage for me to be really honest about what is that work that I'm most passionate about, because it's definitely not the most lucrative, right? Education environment or not the money-making space.
Or kids.
Or kids, right? So it's the wealth of, you know, a day where you feel truly on purpose and you helped to create experiences for people that were really meaningful and rewarding, and being able to grow food and tend to the environment and help people see where they can be a part of the solution is hopeful. And it's definitely not going to solve the problem, but if there was this type of work happening by more people in more communities, it would ripple out and scale up to make a meaningful impact. So it is, it's a journey for me, but it is just like what it is with you. It's that being outside and having those deep personal relationships and community connections that I think helps the existential dread be a little bit less gripping sometimes.
Yeah, I mean, well, we're out of time, and also we'll have to stop because that's really moving. And I really deeply appreciate and admire you and your expertise and your commitment to our community and our future as a species. And I thank you for your friendship and your work.
I'm going to cry. Oh, I miss you. And thank you very much. You have been just somebody I really honor and look to and trust in the community. And I'm glad we're in relationship and friendship and partnership and trying to do the best we can for the children here and for the community at large and this podcast. So thank you.
Yeah, so
time with me.
Just to summarize for everybody listening, the various organizations that you are running and leading and commitment to our future as a community, Community Ecology Institute down at the farm off of Cedar Lane.
That's an umbrella organization, nonprofit, and everything else falls under that now.
Okay, got it. And the other projects are Roots and Wings, which is an out school, Columbia Families in Nature, and then Families Learning in Nature Together. I'm sure there will be more projects because you are completely unstoppable. Thank you for your time today. I look forward to giving you a big hug in the near future.
That would be great. Thank you, Dr. Beams. I appreciate it. Be well.
You too. Bye.
Thank you so much for listening to the Rubik's Mental Health and Wellness Podcast. We'll return next month for more strategic conversation about how to live our most meaningful and fulfilling lives.
Connect with us. We are Dragon Digital Radio.